This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm here, and welcome to the 200th milestone episode of the Town Hall Academy. Now, this has been the industry's premier and original weekly subject forum since January 2017. Hey, thank you for your support in listening and watching the forum and making it a staple of information and insights for you, our automotive service industry. Wisdom comes in many sources. Now, if you think about the many mistakes you've made, and there are hundreds, me too, but the blessing that can come from failure is to think of the challenge you faced and the outcome that happened. Now, your panel today digs deep in their heart, and they share with you the triumphs that came from some really tough and low spots in their careers. I thank Emily Chung, Kelly Weatherby, Matthew Lockowitzer, and Kevin Eckler for their extremely transparent and emotional rendering on how they overcame a huge mistake and found blessings in their decision to act. Hey, always so grateful to Shop Marketing Pros and Shopware for sponsoring the Academy. Are you tired of your cookie-cutter website? Is it bringing you new clients? Well, let our friends at Shop Marketing Pros create a website that is as unique as your shop is. On the web at shopmarketingpros.com. And stop spending time chasing customers. Shopware's leading shop management system is helping shops like yours generate more profit per ticket with less time on the phone. Break away from your legacy system. Do it and implement a completely contactless workflow today. Get started at getshopware.com. Hey, the key talking points for this episode are already done for you on the show notes page at remarkableresults.biz/A200. This makes a great meeting agenda. I hope you're on my email list, a great way to keep in touch with all episodes. And also, you get my blog post every Monday morning. Go to remarkableresults.biz/insider. And did you see this week's virtual shop tour on aftermarketweekly.com? Go there, binge on them all. Hey, now a tale of the positive blessings that came from some very tough times as my guest shares them. I believe you can relate to these stories. And if not, use them to help you through the challenges that you can and will face. An unbelievable milestone, everyone. It's the 200th episode of this. We've done it nonstop for 200 weeks now. And I was so glad to have you all here and participate. And people that watch the videos over the weekend, and they go to the website and they watch it and they listen to the podcast. And it was something I just wanted to do years ago. And it was so embraced by the automotive industry, the aftermarket, and by all the guests who come on and share their great stories and their great wisdom as we try to cover a brand new single subject each and every week, as I call it, the Aftermarket's original weekly single subject forum. We're live from the Remarkable Results Radio podcast studio. Let me introduce my great panel to you. Matt Lockowitzer from Matt's Automotive Service Center, 6 locations, Fargo, Moorhead, North Dakota, somewhere out there, right?
Yep, Minnesota, North Dakota. We're actually going to be closing on 2 more locations next month.
Rocking, baby, rocking. Congrats, Matt. Well, you need to come in and tell us your growth story. Emily Chung is with us from Auto Niche in Markham, Ontario. Hello, Emily.
Hello. Good
morning. Emily's been on the show a couple of times. We did a great episode with her, and then we did another one, it was another panel. It wasn't a town hall, but thank you, Emily, so much for being here. Kelly Weatherby, Accurate Automotive, Mesa, Arizona, in business with her husband, Lee. Hi, Kelly.
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
By the way, I know what everyone's going to talk about, and there's some just great, great stuff to talk about. In fact, I believe everyone out there is going to relate to the blessings in disguise of your biggest mistake. And Kevin Eckler is with us, foreign car specialist, Poughkeepsie, New York, in business with wife Lisa. Emily, I want to start with you. Ladies first. I flipped a coin and I found it. Emily, just tell us all about the wonderful blessing you had from figuring out what one of your biggest mistakes was.
When you first emailed me the question, I was thinking, man, there's so many to choose from. You know, but I kind of have had a shift in my mindset. You know, I used to say, oh, you know, stuff happens to me. And now I just believe firmly that, you know, things happen for me. So no matter what, if it is, you know, good or not good, it's always an opportunity for me if I choose into that mindset. And so for me, one of the biggest mistakes I had was holding on to somebody who was way too long, who was too toxic for the work environment. And it's something where, you know, after the fact, you think, you know, oh, yeah, I shouldn't have kept them this long. And it's stuff that you, I think, even when speaking with other business owners, that we all know that we shouldn't be keeping these people too long. And yet, you know, I did. It was becoming a really toxic work environment. I mean, he was a great technician. And I really believed, I got to the point where I believed that, you know, I couldn't function the business without him. But it was so toxic and such a disrespectful environment that, you know, even though he was my employee, for example, I mean, it was incredibly toxic. I remember times when, you know, if I couldn't, and I was working on the floor with him. So if I couldn't punch out a ball joint, you know, he would call me a four-letter C word. And it was just incredibly toxic. It got to the point where I was so stressed out about the whole situation that, you know, I wasn't eating or drinking anymore, nor was I going to the washroom anymore. So my body was like physically starting to shut down. And in that moment, I just had to look at, you know, my family. I had two young boys at the time, and I was thinking, you know, if this persists, I'm not going to be around for them much longer. And so eventually I made the decision to let him go. The decision in and of itself is not difficult. It's the how and what is it going to look like after. That's the difficult part for me.
So do you think you overthought the ramifications afterwards?
I don't know if I overthought the ramifications. I think that the ramifications that I perceived at the time seemed so real that I could not see any other option for what it could look like after.
It looked doom and gloom after.
Yeah. And I fully recognize that that was where my headspace was at anyways. And, you know, aside from him being a technician, because I relied on him and because he was so good of a technician, I started to rely on him for other things like business operations advice. And I mean, he'd been with me for many years. And I always say this, people don't become one thing in a day, right? It's the tiny little changes over the course of time. And all of a sudden you look at it and you're thinking, well, like, what happened, right? This isn't the person that I knew how many years ago. Because if somebody came in and changed 180 in the span of a week, that's easy, right? Like you can definitely identify that and kind of move on from there. But it was the tiny changes that happened. So, you know, needless to say, my business, you know, suffered, so to speak, in many different areas. And then the rest of the employee, the rest of the team, like the entire work culture was affected too. I mean, I did eventually terminate him. And that was, you know, in and of itself, a whole other journey in learning how to do that properly and well.
Ah, that's interesting, to do it properly and well. That's a powerful statement there and an important one. But another thought was, did the rest of your team come up to you, shake your hand and thank you?
Some of them did. I think some of them were unraveled into his space too. So, you know, and for me, honestly, Carm, like even to this day, no matter the craziness that has happened, And some of the things that he said to me and done and everything, no matter that, at the end of the day, Carm, he is still a fellow soul walking this life journey with me. And so in terms of terminating him, you know, I really did try to do it in the most respectful and honoring way that I could, you know, despite everything. So that's the mindset that I have, not including all the inner thoughts that I had, of course, right? Which are probably not appropriate for this PG show.
Who said this was a PG show?
Yeah. So the blessings, I mean, you know, since then I've learned to be, you know, slow to hire, quick to fire. I've learned the difference that, you know, just because somebody's a great technician doesn't mean that they're, you know, a business owner. And so they're two totally different skill sets, even though I'm sure we all know some people in our lives who believe that, you know, they can do one thing, therefore they can do the other. And I think as business owners, we all know, we get it. And, you know, I figured out that I'm more resourceful than I had given myself credit for. You know, I was been in this space that I thought, you know, I can't do without him. I don't know how this is going to work. And, you know, when push comes to shove, I figure it out, right? And so it's been many years since, and we've grown the business since. So to me, it was more just one more data point that I could add to my resiliency as a person. And I now know very clearly the price that I pay when I allow, you know, a toxic work environment to persist.
Wonderful. Let me ask my panel to raise their hand if they could relate to that story.
And I think you had the way that it sounds like you handled it is just, you know, and are still like reflecting back on that. You seem very much at peace, which is really great. It does seem as though, like, when we're challenged, what we can think of in our mind is usually far worse than what it's really going to be when you make that change, right? When you decide to, you know, terminate, or you decide to, you know, confront somebody that's made something toxic in your life, mm-hmm. or at least, you know, contributed to toxicity in your life. We sometimes allow it. It sometimes comes in without us inviting it. But when we realize that it's toxic, then we have that, what am I going to do with it now? You know, and it sounds like you really handled it beautifully.
Thank you.
You're right, Emily and Kelly. It's a struggle because you think you're going to fail miserably. Your business is going to go away. Your customers are going to leave. You create every negative possible situation in your mind, and then you never act on it because you play out that story of the negative outcome. And, you know, I'll tell you, that was one of my biggest years and years ago.
Yeah. And I think the mark of our character is really coming out of it, right? And that we can fail, like all these mistakes we're going to be talking about, right? That we can fail again and again, and we just won't stay down for whatever reason. We just get back up and do it again, you know, and just keep moving in our business. And just one more point that I wanted to make was, you know, I get feedback sometimes with people that, you know, because I'm the business owner, then surely I must be able to control and create and, you know, and I'm just like, it's not really like that. Like if you're a business owner, it's not really like that. Yeah. You know,
wouldn't you love to put your shoe on someone else just for a week, you know, and let them sort of feel how that isn't, you know, that you have all the control.
Yeah. And I think to the employees who believe that, oh, management just, you know, has this and, you know, just out for this, like, you know, I mean, they don't necessarily see, I think, how much we care. Right. At least some of us, right? That we genuinely care about them as people.
That's it.
So, yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Thank you for that. Now look, it's our 200th episode, and we're not here to make this whole milestone a downer, but we're here, okay, because it's not. Because the beauty of, I think, all of these stories is that there was a lot of light at the end of every tunnel that sometimes we create for ourselves. And I know someone else is going to come on and share a similar story, but let's move to our other lady who's on the panel, Kelly, and let's hear your biggest mistake that produced some great outcome for you.
Okay. Well, like all of us on the panel, we've all said there was many mistakes because being in business, being in life, being in a family unit, I mean, it just lends itself to mistakes and growth. I want that to be the message today, the growth, because we already heard Emily and her story and how she grew through it and how she has come to realize that she has a lot more, you know, whatever word you want to put on it, chutzpah or moxie or, you know, grit. You know, we have all kinds of words that we put on it, but once you get those things handled, it gives you that confidence that you can grow and change, and change is scary sometimes. Anyway, my most recent mistake, actually, because I had sent Carm several, but I think this one is relevant because it's happening now even. So Lee and I have been a part of we're a part of a 20 group. And with that said, a lot of times we have emails blowing back and forth or our Facebook page messages. And, you know, as life gets busy, you become less current on responding to those, right?
So attentive.
And, yeah. Oh, gosh. So anyway, Lee and I had life happening to us. And it was just, I think I said, a train wreck. So that just gives you all kinds of visual of where we were. Okay. Our business was doing okay. Our home life was not fabulous. A little background. I've been in a caregiving chapter for about 13 years with my dad, who's now passed, and I have a Down syndrome adult brother that lives with us. So that kind of lends a little bit of a background. So my Down's brother is in decline. And so we had a lot of life happening to us. And as a couple, you know, some of you might be able to relate out there. As you have these things happening to you, you become less and less communicative with each other. And so we were just kind of going in our own lane and not really blending very well. Anyway, we were becoming less attentive to our emails and our life and paying attention, paying close attention. And so the 20 group had an email going around about a spotlight shop. And we had already had our in-person shop visit. So I was like, oh, you know, that doesn't really relate to me. I'm just going to, you know, put that to the side burner. I got a lot of stuff going on, whatever. Anyway, as it comes out, because we were less attentive than we should have been, we were chosen to be the spotlight shop, of course. And I mean to tell you, it couldn't have been at a worse time. We were chosen. And with that encompassed, we got five committees assigned to us. Facilities, marketing, Lee and Kelly Headspace, because they could see that we needed some help there. And these are people that love us unconditionally, right? We've been in this 20 group for 15 or 20 years. They know us intimately. They know we've had our highs and lows. So we had these committees that were just focused on us. And that's intense. So we had a virtual shop tour and all these things were happening. And really what came out of it was, this happened in January. And we were putting together our organization chart. They helped us with that. We got our budgeting and our finances on deck. Our Lee and Kelly Headspace Committee was phenomenal. I mean, I just can't even tell you how many blessings came out of that, because not only did our business grow exponentially, our organization and our standing operating procedure manual got done, and that just helps tremendously going forward in our hiring and staffing. We got our help that we needed. And then, you know, we've hired outside. For, you know, we're in a 36-year marriage and, you know, we're just getting our dialed in. It was a tremendous blessing. I can't even count how many ways it helped us. When Lee and I read the email, we cried. To be honest, we cried. We're like, this is terrible. This is the worst thing that's going to happen to us. And it actually turned out to be one of the biggest, most humongous blessings.
Kelly, was it because you were pushed a little bit?
That's 100% the reason. I mean, we were not signing up for it. It wasn't a good time. Like you always, why in the world would you sign up for a shop spotlight when you're in the worst possible
But you
space
didn't, but you
possibly,
didn't sign up.
No, we never, no.
You were voluntold.
Tag, you're it. Yes, exactly. And anyway, it just was a tremendous growing time. This year has been a tremendous growing time. In one of our other times together, Carm, I've spoken of how I have my new lane and I'm just handling marketing now. And I've taken all the other busy work off my plate. We have a finance manager now. He handles all that is banking and all the money and the receivables and payables and all that jazz. So I'm a one lane girl now. I'm in my marketing lane and I am just loving life. And that came of the spotlight shop.
Thank you. Great story. Anybody here can relate to something like that? I'm seeing all the head shaking here. Yeah. Okay. I got out of my comfort zone. I was pushed into a zone I didn't want to be in. But when I came out, I was a new person. I was better. Both you and Lee.
That's exactly right. And our whole team. I mean, it not only helped, you know, our lives, but it helped the lives of the people that work with us in our culture. And, you know, we've brought on new people and it's just tremendous. It's such a, I mean, it makes me emotional to think about how many blessings it was.
We can tell. We can tell from the side of your story that it was so deep. And thank you for that honest and transparent story. It was great. Not many people can come up and tell a story like that, who don't have the level of confidence that you have now, or it continues to grow each and every day.
That's the beautiful part. That's why I say I want growth to be our thread in this story, because out of the train wrecks become beautiful humans.
I love that you guys had your own committee, like Lee and Kelly committee. I love it.
Yeah. We totally did. We needed it so bad.
Yeah, that shows great caring on behalf of your group, that they could see that and they took the time to specifically care to you and tend to you.
That was the humbling experience of the bottom line was, mm-hmm. These people are also running, their shops are moneymakers. You know, they're successful. They have successful shops and lives, and they're also busy. And when we would have these times that people were donating to us, it was just so humbling. You know, we had to find humility and put our pride aside, because they were looking under all the deep rocks. And it was really, I mean, think about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about in your workspace, how many times we don't want to unload we don't want to expose the warts. And boy, we had them out the wazoo. They were looking everywhere. And they found them, and they corrected with criticism, you know, constructive criticism. And we had to be we were in the perfect place, because we knew we needed to be humble and put our pride aside.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Kevin Eckler shares his most fatal flaw in not seeing the bigger picture. Now, you got to hear this. Shopware's innovative shop management system will give you back your time and put more money in your pocket. Make the switch today and watch technician efficiency gain 20%, enjoy increased recommended service, and even grow the highest parts profit margins ever with the smallest amount of work. You know, Steve from Ultimate Automotive says, I love that Shopware lets you complete every estimate on the inspection, and we even have a higher ARO, receive more approvals, and have had a significant increase in revenue. With our previous SMS, estimating was limited because it was so time-consuming. This impacted not only what we could sell on each customer's current visit, but also what we would have prepared for following visits. Hey, your peers are happy. Let Shopware work for you. Book a demo at getshopware.com. Hey, Carm here. Have you heard this before? If you need something, we're just a phone call away. But then when you need something and you make that phone call, nothing. Well, if you needed something from your marketing company right now, today, could you get their help? Or now that they've got your money, has the personalized attention just faded away? Well, we've all experienced something like this. If you want that to go away, I want to introduce you to my friends over at Shop Marketing Pros. Shop Marketing Pros is a boutique marketing company. Now, what that means is they're small. It also means that they know their clients because they communicate with them regularly. If you're tired of working with a big transactional agency who treats you just like another auto repair shop, well, it's time to talk to the folks over at Shop Marketing Pros. They are a real phone call away. Find them on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. A great part of this story, everyone, tell me if I'm wrong, is the more successful you get, the more you're willing to give and help.
Mm. Yeah. 100% true.
Advice is only good if you're willing to accept it and listen to it also.
We could have not grown. We could have chosen not to expose any of the warts. We could have just been, you know, let time take its toll, you know, get from January to September when we were not the spotlight shop anymore, and then be like, yeah, you know, we didn't grow. We didn't, you know, it didn't hurt that bad. No, this one hurt, and we were willing to take the pain to grow through it, and it was perfect timing.
And talk about piled high and deep. Now, you take that little can of cheese called COVID and you put it on top of everything else, right? That's a compounding factor to the nth squared degree, whatever that is, that was up there.
That was one of my blessings in my line items was, listen, if we would not have had that, we would not have been prepared for what happened. We would have, who knows what. But, I mean, we were supported with our group, we were supported with our affiliation with ATI. We were just instructed so well, and it helped us get through that super white water time. Oh gosh, that's such a huge blessing. We already were working hard. So it wasn't like, oh, now we have to work hard because we have COVID or the pandemic or whatever you want to put up, you know, crazy times.
How many times have we all on this panel said, I can't work any harder? Have you ever said that to yourself?
I felt it. I don't know that I've said it out loud, but I felt it.
When you've worked so hard and so passionately for all the right reasons, for all the right purpose, and then you stop and you ask yourself that question, it's not termination. It's not like I'm going to quit. It's one of those, I can't work any harder.
You're just thinking, I'm going to coast for a little bit.
I think you have to say it in order to put it out of your mind. You have to say it so that you keep doing it. I can't work any harder, but I can.
As you're still working hard. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I mean, you know, like our shop was successful. You know, it wasn't like we were going in the tank, but it just propelled us to be even more successful. You know what I mean? Because it's usually just the little tweaks.
All this is tugging at my heart. Thank you for being here. It's the 200th episode. This is all positive stuff, even though we're talking about things that kind of got us to the bottom and then up to the top. Let's go over to Kevin. I'm going to save my favorite, you know, one of my favorite guys until last. Kevin, you don't mind.
Don't mind at all.
You and Emily have a similar story.
Yeah. For us, again, it was probably my most productive, well, he was my most productive technician, most talented by far, too. And when he was hired, he was hired to replace me in the shop. And I was the one that did all the big work, or the diesels and the transmissions. And so, but he was a cancer. He was, once a month, I'd have some kind of meltdown. And I'd have to go talk him off the ledge or whatever it was. And I lost a couple managers or over him. And it just got to a point where we had to make a decision. I go home, you know, 3-4 times, you know, a month, saying I got to fire him and I got to fire him, and I never do it because I look at the report and I'm like, I can't fire him. He's killing it. And on top of that, then I have to go out in the shop, and I didn't want to do that either. This went on for, I mean, I hate to say this, but it was 5 years. Eventually, I made the decision that it was time to go. And the other thing was is, he was perceived as very well liked by all my team. Like, everybody went to him for help and everybody seemed to like him. And so I was worried what firing him would do to my team. And so when we finally did fire him, we had a record month the following month short him. That really opened my eyes to maybe we need to make some other changes as well. And in a course of 4 months, I actually got rid of every piece of cancer that we had. And we ran short staff for a few months, but it attracted better people too, because I had a phenomenal tech apply after he was gone. And he's like, I knew he worked here and I knew what kind of person he was, and I didn't want to work with him.
Wow.
And that guy's still here. So, and he loves it. So, I mean, it's completely changed the culture of our business, which is what I wanted. I wanted the positivity. I wanted a business that really was a family. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've got now. And it's been the last, you know, 4 years have been amazing without him. So,
isn't it amazing that your people know way before you that that someone should go?
It's interesting, though. Sometimes they don't say it, though, and, you know, until after that person's gone or whatever it is. But
Matt, let me ask you a question about that. If you have just an inkling that something's wrong with an individual and the toxicity of the culture of your team, and you spend time with your people, maybe you're doing a quarterly think tank or just bring someone in to chat. How are you? How's it going? How's the business? I mean, can you get a feel for an individual to help you confirm what you feel?
We do regular one-to-ones every 6 weeks. And I think everybody thought that we thought he was above them, or so, you know what I mean? And I think that was something that, you know, we had to identify. And I think everybody knew what was going on, but I don't think anybody wanted to say something, whether to him or to a manager, I'm not sure. But, you know, we've definitely changed some of the questions that we ask in our one-to-ones from this as well, you know, to make sure that we're really getting a pulse of every person and how they get along with their coworkers, you know, or do they feel there's something we can do to make them better or the teams better. And we found since that, I think once people seen I wasn't afraid to get rid of the super tech, that was when all of a sudden it became, yep, I can talk to this person about anything.
Did they step up their game? I think you did say that they did. Huh?
Yeah, we had a record month without him, and he was like, I could run a report for a year and he'd be 148% productive.
I learned something in business, and that was, if you're not at the top of your game, don't go on vacation, because they can figure out how to work without you. And then, did you ever come back from vacation and says, hey, we didn't even know you were gone?
Ow.
Yeah, that's a low blow.
Yeah, that hurts.
To the point where that's the message we need to get through to people that aren't contributing to the level that they should. And again, get the message into the owners that say, don't put up with it. Don't accept that mediocre performer. Even though that person you may conceive as a leader and one of the smartest in the bunch, doesn't mean that the culture that they're playing in is your culture. It's theirs.
Matt, did you find the productivity of the other techs was significantly lower while your super tech was really high and the other guys were way off pace of what they should have been doing?
Yeah, everybody's production obviously I had to increase, but it's been consistently better since then, though, too. That's the interesting part. You know, I think he did bring them down for whatever reason, but I also think that they didn't do jobs because they were afraid that, well, that's his job, that he does that.
Interesting.
And so I thought that, and I want to point out, like, 29 days out of the month, this guy was phenomenal. It was just that one day a month that he would ruin everything, though.
Wow.
And that was the hard part. That's why it took so long for me to make a decision, because 29 days out of the month, he was awesome. But it's, yeah, he getting a fight with his wife that morning or something. It was, so most of the time, well, it had nothing to do with us, but he was pissed about something.
That's what I was thinking. I said there had to have been, if it was just like a day or two a month, had to have been something happening in his life that trickled down into your culture at work.
It did. And that's ultimately what I think what a lot of it was from. So,
yeah, I had a guy that performed incredibly well, and I noticed that everybody else's numbers were down. He was kind of ruining their opportunities. He was creating a culture where they wouldn't feel productive. He talked down at them like they were no good. He was doing things to destroy their ability while working on enhancing his, to make himself look like he was just Captain Amazing while everybody else sucked without him. So
that's exactly what happens. Yeah,
they had a lot more potential, but if you went straight by the numbers and you just looked at the reports, this one guy's absolutely amazing, have to keep him. And everybody else is like, oh, dude, you better step up your game. What's going on? When they were actually being sabotaged by the guy that was destroying the culture and everything else. That's why I was curious about your numbers.
One thing that we changed too since that day is I make technicians do personality assessments as well. And I do that. I won't even hire you unless I know that you're going to fit our culture.
Yeah.
You know, and that's critical. You could be the best technician 500 miles. I don't care.
Yeah.
If you don't fit, you don't fit. That's the end of it.
A DISC assessment, or what do you guys use
for? We use the Burke assessment.
Okay.
So
that's so good. So prior to me coming into the skilled trades, I was a psychometrist. So I would run like the battery test and do all my stats data and whatever. So I was in a totally different world than skilled trades. It's amazing because so many times people say, oh, you know, the questions are so easy, like they can just cheat them. And I'm like, no. By the end of the whole set of questions, if you can cheat that, that's like a whole nother psych profile we got going on, you know? But so good that you do that, because it is so important and you get so much insight from something like that. So good.
When I've taken those tests, Emily, I always say, well, there's another question similar to the one upstairs. How did I answer that? And they're looking, it says, oh, they're testing me if I'm consistent and if the answer up there was right or wrong and this one's different and, oh my God, how am I going to score? I overanalyze the tests.
Yeah, that's what we call test reliability. It's awesome. So good.
I've had managers and techs be like, oh yeah, I could, you know, I can trick it around, you know, in my answers. And I'm thinking, you know, good luck with that. And then when it comes back, it's spot on. And they're like, oh,
I'll tell you a really quick story about a test that I took years ago. It's got to be now 20 years ago. And I sat down in a seminar. It was a hiring seminar that we as leaders of this organization were learning how to interpret the results, but we had to take them ourselves so that you could learn it. So the envelope's in front of me and I open it up and I'm reading it and I go, oh no, oh my God. And the leader, this PhD, came over and said, Carm, what's wrong? And I said, oh my God, these are the things that Anne says about me all the time, and I keep telling her she's wrong.
Spot on.
It nailed me. And then ultimately what happened is I had to learn to accept my total natural self. And, you know, there was if you're stressed, you end up doing this stuff. And finally, I said, when I became a podcaster, I had just taken StrengthsFinder 2.0 and my top five strengths. And I looked at them and I says, that's not who I want to be. And a year later, I look back and I says, oh my God, that's who I am.
That's who I am. Yeah, that's right.
And so I looked at those strengths and I believe that's why the podcast blossomed, because I am actually doing what I think I was intended my whole life to do. There's my learning curve right there.
That's it. And it's so great when you find your lane, isn't it? It's so energetic. Yeah.
Kevin.
Yes, sir.
We got you up, baby. Remember the 200th episode, we're talking a blessing in disguise from my biggest mistake.
Like everybody else, which one do you pick? So, and really thinking about it, I think it's more of a theme than one specific thing. Like my kids always tell me, like, Dad, can't you just come right to the point? Why does everything have to be a story and a lesson? So on that, I'm going to start back as a kid. I used to love taking things apart, love mechanical stuff. It just completely thrilled me. Trying to understand how things work, what they did, how they went, turned into a job in the field, learned how to fix cars, working for an older gentleman, progressed through dealerships and different things, found myself in a shop that specialized in European. I had done a lot of Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche, Mercedes work, and really loved it. Found my home. It was great. Worked there for 3.5 years. The gentleman who owned it went through some personal things in his life and decided that now was the time to sell the business, that he needed to go a different direction in his life, and it was time for him to move on. SBA loan, hated change. They put that in there. If it comes to change, changing jobs, changing things in life, hated change. So my idea of hating change and not wanting to change is, well, I'm just going to get a loan and I'm going to buy the business. That way I don't have to find a new place to work. It's familiar. It's comfortable. Brilliant. how hard can it be, right? You know, you fix cars, people pay you money, life is good, you do what you love. So I bought the business and I worked like an idiot. I worked 15 to 18 hours a day. I love helping people. Fixing cars is a way that I see that I'm helping and assisting people. They've got a problem. I can figure it out. I can fix it. I don't care what it is. I can figure it out and fix it. The reward that you feel from being able to take something broken, touch it, change it, do whatever you do, and now it's functional and it's improved somebody's life quality. It's a huge feeling of self-satisfaction. I feel good about being able to assist people through doing that. And I took on this hero complex, kind of. I would sacrifice myself, time with my family, whatever it was, to fix all these cars that came in. And I took every technical class that I could take. I studied whatever it was that I could take to learn how to fix things better. Every new system that came out, I did everything that I could to learn it. And it was cool. I learned incredible stuff, and I was able to fix things that I never thought I could fix before. So now I own a business, which is great because I'm doing what I love. I'm in the bays, I'm fixing cars, I'm out dealing with people when I have to. No idea how to run a business.
Did you buy yourself a job?
I bought myself security and safety and comfort where I didn't have to worry about somebody telling me what to do, and I could do absolutely what I loved. And that's totally it. And for 20 years, I showed up to work doing exactly what I love. I work on cars, and I love figuring out problems, and I look at things. And like I said, I sought out every bit of technical knowledge I could get. And in looking back and assessing it, and I lost a marriage along the way. I lost a house along the way. I suffered deep personal emotional damage. I have scars on my soul that caused me to be in positions like this where I open up wide and honest, because the pain that I went through, nobody should go through. And it was completely avoidable, and I did it to myself, and there's nobody else to blame. So my fault, my mistake, my not wanting to look any differently is I put my head down, I focused in the work in the day, I looked right now, I looked at the schedules, I looked at the cars, and my thought was, if I'm amazing at fixing cars, and I can fix all these cars, business will run itself, right? I mean, you don't have to be clean. You don't have to have a super clean shop. You don't have to be really organized. You don't have to market. You don't have to even repaint the place, because I'm so good at fixing cars that that's all I got to do. And people love me forever for that, right? Idiot! I was wrong. I lost everything I had that was super important to me. And I suffered so greatly. And I never once thought that if I took and put the effort into learning how to run a business that I put into learning how to fix a car, that life would have been totally different. And then I wouldn't have had to go through that. And looking back through the years, I had so many really good employees that were just yearning for someone to lead them and give them direction and set a vision and show them the course. I helped people lose their way while I was losing my way, because as a business owner, I should have been a leader. I should have set a vision. I should have learn how to protect my people and protect my team by learning how to do the business well as I learned how to repair vehicles well. And totally 100%, that's my fault. And that was my flaw. And the carnage that lay in the wake of everything that happened, I am so sorry for. But the positive side of that is I finally woke up to it. And I have a very analytical mind, which has helped me be really great at fixing technical issues. And I never thought to turn and look and go, all right, this is now where my focus needs to be. I need to look to the direction of the future instead of just looking at the schedule for right now, tomorrow, next week, I have to fix this and that and that. I turned and I thought, I've sacrificed my kids' future and time with them. I've sacrificed financing for my family. I've sacrificed security for my family and for the family of those people that work for me to feel good about fixing something right now. And for 20 years, the feel good was more important than being who I needed to be. It was safe. It was secure. It was like, you try this, and when it goes really bad, you come right back over here, and I'm good, and I'm safe. And I've got it. And nobody can hurt me here because I can do this and I'm amazing. And then I step back. I'm like, holy crap. I am just throwing everything away for that. Everybody's got a different tolerance for pain and everybody's got a different pain level. And they'll put up with countless amounts of stupidity and suffering before they finally go, why the hell am I doing this? There was one point in my life where I had looked for management help and I had gone to one class. And the person that I went to was so pushy and so aggressive. When you push me, I push back way harder. Me and my authority issues. Yeah. So when you try to tell me what to do, if I'm not ready to hear it, you got a fight on your hands. And it's a hard and ugly fight. But I finally had broken my pride and my spirit enough where I thought, this is going nowhere. I've got 20 years into this. And I've fixed an awful lot of cars. And I have a toolbox full of crap and junk all over the place. And what do I have to show for it? Really nothing. I have pain and suffering. And this tiny little thing that I hinge on my momentary feel good to justify it all. That's when things pivoted. And I'd gone to every World Pack training class that they'd ever had, their expos. But it was always technical, technical, technical. And I finally, like, you know what? I need to take a business class. And I need to start hanging out with people that are successful. My dad used to say all the time, you're judged by the crowd that you hang out with. Also said a lot, the bait that you fish with is what you'll catch, which applies to a lot of things in life. But I never turned and associated with people that successfully owned businesses or successfully focused on moving forward. It was always with peers that were great at fixing cars and engineering and discovering different things, which was great and it has its place. But I finally shifted focus and we joined a 20s group. We joined World Pack Smart Group, which was amazing because I walked in to people that I felt were peers and went, holy crap, you can be really good and have a clean shop. And all of the myths and everything that I told myself, I don't have time to clean. I'm so busy fixing cars. I don't have time for this. And I realized I have just poisoned my mind to see what I wanted to see. I had the blinders on to justify everything that I was doing wrong. And I justified every single one of my mistakes to myself internally to keep me safe and protected. And the reality is you can have a really clean shop. We emptied the shop out. I threw away projects that I had invested tons of time and ton of money in. And I suddenly felt better, like that toxic employee that you get rid of. Finally, that burden's off my mind and it's gone and I don't have to worry about that. It's not stealing time from me anymore. It's not stealing space. I'm like, I can work in a car in that bay. Holy cow, we can fix something. I can hire somebody to put him in there. And I have transitioned to a point where I've built my team. I've set a vision for him. I've set boundaries for him. We have a master tech who came to us from BMW and he left Wednesday night going, this is amazing. I'm going to go back to my job on Friday and sip a cup of cappuccino and have him wash my car and enjoy having a day off that I've never had off in 26 years. Has never had the day after Thanksgiving off. Mm-hmm. And I've learned how to be the leader that sets the focus and the direction. And if a customer's angry, I'm not focusing my team because I protect them because I see the value in the people and in my team and what they do and who they are as people, rather than my own personal feel good and protecting some little moment of thing that I've had.
Kevin, was fixing cars a drug for you?
Oh, absolutely. It drives you crazy. You do it in your sleep at night. It's all you think about. It's all you focus on. And you're, I don't know what the drug terms are, chasing the dragon or something. But yeah, it's what I needed. I mean, I sacrificed everything I had for it.
But you turned the business around. You started to learn more about being a businessman. I know you're getting ready to grow. So many great things are going on for you, your company, your team, your people. Do you ever go back in and take a little bit of that drug stuff out of a bay?
You know how hard it is not to do that? There are times when it gets really busy and I'm like, let me in. I can fix that. I'll take on the craziest projects and the worst stuff and whatever's going on. I'm like, I can do it. I can do it. And then it takes me six times longer.
You're running the business so that you can have that freedom now.
Yeah. But I also realize that when I'm in the bay, my productivity sucks. I have so many other things that I need to focus on, I need to do, and I still love doing that. But at the same time, I'm like, why am I doing this? Any one of the other guys would have had this done and out the door. But I love the business. I love the relationships. I love the learning aspect. I love having broken those myths that are in my life. I mean, we could run a Mythbusters show on all of the crap that I had built up in my mind that wasn't true at all. We epoxied the floors. I used to be embarrassed to bring customers out into the shop to show them something on their car. I was like, don't step on that. Don't trip over that. Watch out for the crap. It's around the corner. Junk everywhere. 5,000 square foot shop. We probably worked in 1,800 square feet of it. And the rest of it was like, oh my God, why do I own that?
Yeah, Kevin, just hearing your story, I think that, you know, the sooner that we can own, you know, mm-hmm. our personal responsibility for the matter, yeah. the sooner we can choose to pivot it, right? And so I so appreciate your story just from, because I can still hear how many times you're like, you know, I chose to do this and mm-hmm. this is a result of whatever. And I think for us, as soon as we can get to that point, the sooner we can say, you know what, then I'm choosing to not deal with this anymore. And
yeah.
just another point you had said about leadership. And, you know, I always think, every year there's a great conference called Global Leadership Summit. And mm-hmm. basically, you know, everybody's a leader no matter what position they're in. It's just a question of which direction are you leading people in, you
yeah.
know? Right. And so just even recognizing that, you know, you could have stepped up and just the potential, or not the potential, but you had described it as the actual, you know, leading people out of their own potential too, right? And just,
yeah
it's amazing. That's such a great
learning. Definitely coming out, you've come out of your bay and now you're looking out for the whole group, right? Before you were maybe just looking for you in the bay and the satisfaction that you had. And you described it as, you know, you have this great satisfaction in making something work better than it did before to help somebody's mm-hmm. life be better. Mm-hmm. But think about how now your influence and you're taking care of the group can influence many lives and their families' lives. Because really that's what we do when we lead somebody into a better path, is we look for them to be better, which makes us better, which makes their families better and our family better. So instead of just being in your bay where it made you who you were, mm-hmm. now you can influence this group of people so that they can be better.
Yeah.
Humans, so that, you know, it makes our existence happier
and
more cohesive.
I was so busy being busy and I was so busy being safe that I never even entertained that stuff, because it was safe to do that. And like when you had to step out of your comfort zone and you had to be honest with yourself and say, all right, what I'm doing right now isn't the best thing for me. And I had to realize that I'm responsible for all these people and what I'm doing doesn't help any of them. And I now have a coach. Cecil's amazing. He is brutally honest with me as I need. My personality needs someone to go, stop the crap. Let's get to it. Stick to your word. Do what you said you were going to do. Let's be accountable and let's make this happen.
I wrote down the word blinders on when he said that. And I can't emphasize that enough, because Kevin, there's thousands of people in your position in this industry right now, thousands of them that will not embrace that formal business education, A20 group, a coaching company, will not listen to the podcast because they think they know it all. And this story had to be told. The reason I left Kevin for last, I knew what his story was going to be. I've heard it before. You say it so eloquently and so transparently and so honestly. I can't thank you all enough for being here. And I think the whole theme of this thing was, you know, we have our blinders on every once in a while. You know, every one of your stories was the blinders were on. And it's, you know, I think of that horse, you know, we want him to go in only one direction down the highway and we put these blinders on while he's running a race. Well, we're always seem to be running a race and we always seem to have our blinders on.
Your show is like checks and balances for our life. Every time I try to lie to myself and tell me that I don't need this, and I listen to a podcast and somebody reinforces exactly what I need to hear, which is, I never looked for this stuff. I never looked outside of my own little world to know that this existed, which is why I encourage people and I get on, I'm on groups and I'm on blogs and I talk to people like, here's amazing resources. Take advantage of them. Be honest with yourself and look and see. And look at all these people that have succeeded.
Sharing in this mm-hmm. kind of group setting or any group setting that you can share your story and mm-hmm. expose those warts that I talked about and yeah. help people know they're not in the boat alone, because so many people are listening to podcasts and now right now mm-hmm. and thinking, oh, I've got that horrible person in the shop that's toxic to my culture. Oh, I have a relationship with my husband or wife that needs some work. Am I willing mm-hmm. to put it in? Oh, I have, you know, had carnage in my life and am I willing to accept that as, you know, a mistake and grow from it? And yeah. I mean, you say the growth in Kevin that he's talking about is just, you know, exponential. Is what a great experience. Yeah. And I'm so glad to have been here to hear your story. So thank you for sharing. So great.
Yeah. And yeah. I have to be open and honest with it, because if I can save one person from going through this, mm-hmm. it's all worth it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the biggest thing is that mm-hmm. we can present the hope, right, and the reality of yeah. coming out of the situation, because yeah, we know we're not alone, right?
Yeah,
and sure. so, but it's just sometimes just seeing that somebody has been there and done that, and this is how they got through it is encouragement.
Andy Bizzub, a great friend of the show and a shop owner, said one day that the podcast is like a 30-minute 20 group. And if you choose not to be in a 20 group or in a coaching program or a peer group and you listen alone to the thoughts that come out of this show and you cannot assess you in that story, have I been there, done that? And you cannot then get help, then you're stuck in the Kevin Eckler thing, you know, that spin, Kevin, that you were in. You know, we should call it the Kevin Eckler deep dive hole. It's the rule of holes. You have to know when to stop digging, right?
No doubt. And like I said, we all have different pain tolerances. Apparently, I have a really high tolerance for pain because it's been 5 years out of the hole and the turnaround in my life is amazing. I focus on my family. I don't sacrifice them like I used to, although it's still fall back into some ruts. I try to lead my team and provide a vision. I think my quality of life has gotten tremendous. I have a wife that supports me in ways that I never thought was possible. I have changed my bad decisions, and I have no one to blame but myself. I've changed my poor decisions, my unwillingness to look outside and to face my own mistakes. And my changes have been really, ask Cecil, really slow. He's like, you got to do this. Trust me, try this and that. And I'm like, oh, I'll try 10% of it, but I'll hesitate on all the rest. And then, oh, yeah. Ask my wife.
It sounds
ask
like Kevin goes in the shallow end. Lee and I just jump in the deep end and hope we know how to swim.
No, I'm like,
I mean, we're the opposite end of the spectrum than you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. We just drive right into
water.
It.
I hate cold water. I am not going in there.
No.
And then I try to like, okay, it's not that bad. All right, wow, that really worked. And then, you know, 3 years later, it was like, dude, every single thing I've told you has worked and has brought mm-hmm. positive results. Why don't you try the rest? I'm like, and I'm still fighting excuses, but the change in my life has been amazing.
All right, everyone. Hey, listen, this is the 200th. I couldn't have asked for a better panel. I'm going to pat myself on the back by picking you all. Thank you so much to be here to celebrate the 200th. It's tough for something like this to end, but it has to. And it's almost like we could go on for 2 hours and it'll be classic podcasting. Thank you to Matt Lockowitzer from Matt's Automotive Center. 6 locations and growing, Fargo, Moorhead, Minnesota area. Emily Chung, Auto Niche, Markham, Ontario. Kelly Weatherby, Accurate Automotive, Mesa, Arizona, with husband Lee as they climbed out. And great story. Kevin Eckler, Foreign Car Specialist, Poughkeepsie, New York, with wife Lisa. Now, Lisa said she wanted to know what you were going to say, and she thinks you know. So I would love to know later. Email me, Lisa, and tell me if Kevin bared his heart and soul to exactly the tune you thought he was going to. Thank you all so much for being here and celebrating the 200th and for your great, great, honest, and transparent advice to the industry.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.